You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Action Comics 1000, Batman number 45, Mr. Miracle number 8, The Brave and the Bold, Batman and Wonder Woman number 3, Batman Creature of the Night number 3, Supergirl season 3 episode 14, Shot Through the Heart, Flash season 4 episode 18, Lose Yourself, Black Lightning season 1 episode 13, Shadow of Death, The Book of War, and Arrow season 6 episode 19, The Dragon. But before we get into that, let's get into some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. Citizen Cold and Black Siren are coming back to Flash for the Fury Rogue episode. Now, I knew about Citizen Cold coming back, but I did not know about Black Siren.
Yeah, I didn't either, and I'm not surprised that she's back on the show. I expected it to at some point, you know, that's where she got her start as a character. But I anticipated if it happened, it would be her on her way back to her own Earth. You know what I mean? I think we can probably safely rule that out because her story definitely isn't done on Arrow, or at least I don't think it's done. So we can assume that that's not why she's going to be on the show. So I'll be curious to see what she's up to.
Right. And I have a theory that she might possibly be the Black Siren from Earth X. Now, I haven't heard anything either way, but that's just another idea I'm throwing out there.
Huh, that could be interesting, yeah.
But I guess we'll have to see. All right, and for other bit of DC news, Gotham is doing a No Man's Land finale, and they're planning on rebooting the series. Now, I saw another article today saying that they're going to have Bruce go full-on Batman for the next season. So I don't know if that was true or not, because I haven't been watching Gotham, but that might pique my interest where I might just start picking it up with the next season.
I'm curious to see how much of a reboot it really is. You know what I mean? I almost wonder if they're using it as a buzzword to get people reinvigorated in the show. Because I do feel like it's tapered off for a lot of people. I don't know for sure. I haven't seen the numbers, but I suspect that the ratings are a little bit down. So we'll see. I mean, they've started leaning more heavily into the Joker stuff and into the Batman stuff. To me, I mean, obviously that's what people want, but it also feels like they're like, well, we got to get something to people to watch the show. But I don't know. I almost wonder if they would recast, if they went into him fully being Batman. I have no problem with the guy that's playing Bruce Wayne, but I mean, you know, he's still a skinny teenager.
Yeah. I mean, if they recast it and bring in a, you know, full on Batman, I'm sure people would start watching it.
Yeah. And again, I have no problem with the guy that plays him, but like, if you're going to really have him be Batman, it's not, I don't know if it's fair to ask that guy to bulk up like that. Like, he's not old.
So I guess we'll just have to wait and see what they do with that. All right. Well, that wraps up DC news for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
My name is Brian Foster.
Everything you know is wrong. Got that?
Now, the reason that I'm calling is because I have begun to suspect you don't have any ladybugs in your freezer.
Hey, cuz, Roy here. So about your car.
The darkness was never empty.
There's this presence in my head.
But I'm pretty sure that the book was confiscated by cats.
You're damn right we find a lot of bodies when Foster is around.
And some people call me the Night Blogger.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Action Comics number 1000. We finally made it here, Cletus. Action Comics 1000.
There is a lot going on in this one. I feel like it's picking this up. There's going to be one story that you're going to really like. I feel like it'd be really hard to not like any of them. There's so many different stories, different art styles, different, you know, storytelling techniques. There's something in here for everybody, I think.
I think so, too. Now, I texted Cletus and told him, hey, pick out your top three. So that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about our top three. So should we start with three and work to number one, or should we start with number one and work down? What do you want to do?
Oh, we got to work up.
Got to work up.
Save the best for last.
All right. Who's going first?
You go first.
All right. Number three, I chose Never Ending Battle by Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason.
You and I think alike, my man, because that is my number three as well. That's funny.
That is funny.
It was really good. The thing I loved about this story was the sort of travel through Superman's history. It was so fun, and seeing all the different eras of Superman and all the, like, the art styles that he's gone through as those eras have gone by. It was fun. It was just a really fun journey through Superman, I thought. I really enjoyed that story.
I did too. And that's the reason why I picked it also, because I love seeing the journey of Superman and then it ending it back with his family, you know, with Lois and John and even Krypto. I just liked it. I liked the journey through the history and the ending with the family. I guess that's why
I love them giving him crap for the sort of like exposition that he's got. They're like, whatever, Dad, just cut the cake already. I mean, the story was so good. It really did make me miss Tomasi. Like, I'm going to miss Tomasi's run. Like, I really felt like he got Superman.
Yeah, I'm really going to miss it too. I was just getting ready to say that before you did. But yeah, I mean, that was great. Great story. All right, let's go to number two. For number two, I had Action Land by Paul Dini and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. I'm taking it your number two was different.
And mine is different, so let's go with yours first.
All right, reason why I picked Action Land, because I thought it was a fun adventure where you're at an amusement park and the people get on the ride and they get to kind of journey through Superman's life and what his life is kind of like. And then you get so far and Mr. Mixie Pilik, and it ends up, it's kind of like his, it's not really real, it's his fantasy kind of thing of what he thinks the Superman story is. And it ends up Batmite and these other little creatures. I don't know. I just thought it was a fun tale.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed that one too. I actually thought it was going to be a reference to Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, the old story by Alan Moore, because Mixie ends up being one of the main villains of that story. I thought, oh, I wonder if this is sort of some sort of like homage to that, but it wasn't, and that was fine. I thought it was true to the character. Like, yeah, he could. He is definitely powerful enough to get rid of anybody he wanted to, but that's not Mixie. Right?
No, it's not.
So yeah, so that was a fun story. I enjoyed that one.
It would be no fun for him to get rid of Superman because he likes toying with him so much.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, and he's definitely not one that is usually not outright evil, right? He always is antagonistic and is on various levels of how, you know, villainous he can get. But really, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow is really one of the only ones where he is just outright evil, and that's even within that story, it's acknowledged that that's a significant change.
All right, so what was your pick, Cletus?
So my number two, I probably isn't a surprise to anyone, but mine was Of Tomorrow by Tom King.
That doesn't surprise me.
No, I mean, it's Tom King. Of course I'm going to like it. And this one's no exception. It was really cool. It's very typical of King, where it's a very simple story, and yet there's so many layers within just a few pages. It's only like about 5-6 pages long, and yet there's so much in there. The surface story is that Superman is visiting Earth before it finally, you know, perishes in the expanding sun. But even within that, you can see that there's more of that story. You can see that Earth, you know, humanity has survived. Humanity has left Earth. So this isn't the end of people. It's just the end of the planet. You get the other story of Jonathan and Lois are still around. Lois is drinking the Infinity Formula. And then you almost get like a sort of a sense of like, not only is Earth reaching its end, that maybe Superman and Lois are maybe sort of kind of reaching their end, right? You know, like, well, maybe we've lived long enough. I don't know. At least for me, I kind of got that vibe of like, you know, people shouldn't necessarily live forever, you know? So there was just a lot of depth, and even on a simpler level, it's about a guy, you know, Superman talking to his adoptive parents. And that, again, is another thing that I think is so true to the Superman character.
I thought that story was pretty cool, too. I loved how he scooped up the sand and made, like, a statue out of diamonds. He put so much pressure into it, he made a diamond, and it created a statue of his family and left it there with his adopted mother and father. Because this was going to be his last visit. It was a really cool story. All right, well, let's move on to our number one picks. All right, my number one pick was 5 Minutes, and this was by Louise Simonson and artist Jerry Ordway. And I thought this was kind of a fun adventure where Clark is trying to finish up a story for a deadline. He's got like 5 minutes, and Perry's like on him about it. And he hears something, and he takes off, and he's doing all these heroic things. And then he comes back and finishes his article right before it's done. And of course, Perry's like, I'm going to hold the presses. Superman just did this, and wanted him and Jimmy to go get the news story on it. I just thought it was a fun adventure. And I love Jerry Ordway's artwork. It reminds me of a Shazam run, actually.
Yeah.
All right. What was your number one pick?
Again, not a surprise. For me, I felt like it was almost automatic. The Car by Jeff Johns and Richard Donner. Additionally, drawn by, I think it's Olivier Coppel. I don't know. I think that's how you say his name. But it was so good. It's a story behind the famous Action Comics cover. Like, obviously that cover is within the story, but we get that sort of the other part of the story that you didn't see, the non-action part of the Action Comics story. And it was nice. I mean, the artwork was fantastic, but then the thing I just liked about it was that it was a Golden Age Superman, but it was a story about the Superman that we've kind of come to know. Because Golden Age Superman would not have done what we see within this story. This is more like what the idealized Superman that has sort of formed in the decade since, where he goes back and he doesn't just punish this guy that he tracks down. Instead, he's like, hey, I understand that you had a rough life. You can turn it around in a sense. And the guy does that. Like, he is like Superman gets to him on some level. And it was just one of those nice, simple, uplifting stories. I really liked it.
Yeah, I love the last panel where he turns on the fire hydrant. He turns it on for the kids to play in. Yeah. I love that scene.
Yeah, it's so good. It was just one of those things. It was such a simple Superman moment, I thought, where he has this interaction with somebody and it leaves a positive impact, even if it's just one moment, positive impact on that guy's life. I really liked it.
Yeah, I like that story too. There was a lot of good stories in this, I thought. And yeah. It was hard to nail down my three, but that was what I ended up picking when I decided.
There were some that I could, you know, that were okay. And then there were other ones I thought were clear standouts for me. I wanted to give an honorable mention to Scott Snyder's, where he meets up with Lex. That one was really fun, too. I don't think there was many that were bad. It was more just like some were just that much better than others.
Yeah. I thought the one written by Brad Metzler was pretty good, Faster Than a Speeding Bullet. I like that one too, where the woman's smart enough to put her head into the gun kind of thing, giving Superman time to get there to save her.
Yeah, I thought it was a shame that one had not the best art. I thought, at least for me, my taste, because the story was really good, but the artwork was very like mediocre for me, and I was like, oh man, I felt like it did a disservice to the story.
Yeah, that artwork was weaker than some of the other ones. I got to say that.
Yeah. Which, I mean, they had almost all of their big hitters in this. So it's not like DC didn't go all out, but they can't draw everything.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Before we move on, we got to talk about one other story that was in this. And that was The Truth by Brian Michael Bendis and art by Jim Lee. Because this one, they ended up continuing. And I think it's going to continue on it's going to continue on to the next issue. We know Brian Michael Bendis is taking over.
I got to say, it was one of my least favorite, which is not great, because that's the one that's like the future of the Superman franchise.
One thing
I have to say, I don't know. So you, like you said, it was drawn by Jim Lee, who is a very, very good artist. Don't get me wrong. I really don't think he's a great Superman artist, because to me this whole story felt like that sort of new 52 action, gritty, heavy, like Superman. Like the Superman that people didn't really like that much. This story felt like that a little bit. And I don't know if it was necessarily the writing or if it was the combination of the writing and Jim Lee's artwork. Jim Lee's artwork is naturally that sort of like super gritty 90s action stuff, which is fine. I have no problem with that. But for me personally, in my sensibilities, it's not suited to Superman. I think that was one of the reasons why it didn't really click with me.
You know, they spent half the story with those ladies talking about his red underwear is back.
Yeah.
Which I don't really care, because I like the newer costume myself, so either one's fine with me. I did like the fact that Supergirl was in it, though. Yes. It was more focused on Superman.
Yeah, I agree with you. The red underwear is, it's fine. It is classic Superman, but to me it's more important that Superman reads and acts like Superman. Like, he can be wearing any costume as long as it still feels like Superman. That's what I want. So, like, the Rebirth Superman was great. Had nothing to do with his costume, and had everything to do with the way that, in particular, Tomasi was writing him.
Now, one of the things the story revealed was there's some guy who's claiming he was the one that destroyed Krypton. And even said he spoke to Jor-El. So we're already starting to see Bendis changing things.
Haven't we read some story like this before? It was the thing. It was like, this is your big Superman story? Is I the one responsible for the death of Krypton? We've seen this story.
Okay, I don't remember, but okay.
I mean, Brainiac. We've seen it from Brainiac.
Oh, yeah.
There's a really good Jeff Johns, Gary Frank Superman story that is basically centered around Brainiac and Superman fighting, and Brainiac being the one responsible for the death of Krypton. And I'm sure there's been other ones too. I don't know. It's not that I'm not interested, but it's like, well, but that's not a new story. It's new for this character, sure, but I don't know. I mean, if you're gonna make such a big Bendis is coming, and we're gonna, you know, splash page after splash page of this ad, and it's the home run hitter story, and it's like a story we've seen before. I mean, come on, guys, we can do a little bit better than this.
Now, I noticed right at the end it said to be revealed in The Man of Steel. So I'm guessing this is going to be a new title.
Yeah, I believe so, because I think they're wrapping up a couple. I don't remember, is Superman? I think Superman is ending for a little bit, and Man of Steel is going to be
Superman's ended. I can't remember if it was this week or last week, but it was finishing up the Boy Zorro storyline. Oh, that's what it was. Tomasi's last issue was them moving out of the farmhouse, out of Hamilton. It was a good story, too. Kind of a good end to Tomasi's run. So I suggest you guys check that out. I can't remember. I think it's like Superman number 45, if I remember right off the top of my head.
That sounds right. I'm pretty sure 45 was the issue.
Yeah, if you haven't checked that out, check it out. It's pretty good. And it's a one-shot, so.
So how excited by this story were you? Obviously, my opinion is well-known at this point.
I mean, I don't know. I wasn't that excited about it. I'm like, we're gonna change the story of Krypton being destroyed to this dude. I don't know. I wasn't that invested in that villain either. I don't know if it was, you know, he didn't really give us that much of a story right there, but I don't know. I just wasn't that thrilled about it. Bring me back to Mozzie.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. It seemed like, especially that last page, seems like it's banking on you being very intrigued by that. Like, oh, wait, this dude destroyed Krypton? What? I have to read this. And I feel like most DC fans are going to be like, eh. Because it's not new. That's not a new angle. That's not something, you know, that's not something that are going to get readers on the edge of their seat, I don't think. Because it's not something that I think a lot of people are wanting to see either. Krypton has been destroyed, so it's not really a pressing matter for Superman readers, I guess. Also, just like from a tone perspective, the last thing I want to see after enjoying so much of Tomasi's run is Superman with that like face with a sword getting plunged through his chest. Like it's such the polar opposite of what was a very well received, both critically and commercially, Superman run. And it's like just the, like, if you want the one image encapsulating the difference between the two, it's that right there.
Yeah, I want to see the family stuff. I've really enjoyed it. That's what I want to see.
We'll see. I mean, it could be. It, you know, and it's possible that even if this story is a miss, it could be good. If it's a miss, that the next story he has after that will be good. So I'm not saying that this is going to be a total disaster. I just, for me, I read that and was like, you know, I kind of would be good if we just were sticking with what we were doing.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, but we'll see what happens. All right, let's move on to Batman number 45. All right, this story came as a shock to me because I wasn't expecting a Booster Gold story.
No, me neither. I can't even tell you how excited I was. I was like, when I saw the cover and Batman saying Booster Gold must die, I was like, wait, are you doing a Booster Gold story?
Now, we talked about a while back, I can't remember how many podcasts back, but we talked about Tom King teasing a Booster Gold story. And apparently this is it.
Yeah, which is super exciting. I think both of us kind of assumed that he was going to pop up in whatever that other new title that King is developing. And so I kind of set it aside mentally because I was like, oh, he's going to pop up in that. So I'm excited for when that comes out. And then to see him come in here, and it looks like it's a two-parter, or at least a two-parter. It's exciting. Oh, man. Everybody knows. Tom King is one of my favorite writers, and him writing one of my favorite characters. What more can I say?
Okay, so Booster Gold decides he needs to get Batman a wedding present. But what do you get somebody who has everything? So what does he do? He goes back in time and saves Bruce's parents from dying so they can have quality time with them. But when it's time to go back and fix things back to the way they originally were, Bruce Wayne doesn't want to have any part of that. And we see him destroy Skeets.
What I liked about it was that it was sort of twofold. So it's an homage to for the man who has everything, the famous Superman story. And Booster, in a sense, it was in a little bit of a meta moment. Booster is inspired by that story to then give Batman the same thing. And it's sort of like in his Booster logic, Superman had that moment where he kind of lived in this paradise / nightmare. And he grew from that experience where he realized that, yes, that a world where I would have lived on Krypton would have been nice, but the world that I actually live in is better. You know, so the path that my life took me on is pretty good after all. And so Booster's shooting for that with Batman. His idea is, oh, I'll show Batman what the world like would be if his parents survived and he wasn't Batman. And it's terrible, with the idea being, well, Bruce will then be glad that he is Batman. He'll be grateful on some level that I showed him this world, which is just a terrible, like, on paper, you can see Bruce be like, yeah, this is a great idea. And in practice, you see just how dumb of an idea and like how potentially scarring that can be for somebody, especially somebody damaged as Batman is, as opposed to Superman. It's just hilarious. I just thought it was so funny because you could see Booster's logic and in very Booster fashion just be like, what a terrible, dumb idea.
So I'm curious how he's going to fix it, especially with Skeets destroyed.
And what a dark world it was in, too. I thought that was one of the things I really enjoyed with the comic was the way you had... It was so dark. I mean, you had a gun-wielding Dick Grayson as Batman. You had a Jokerized Hal Jordan blow his brains out with his own ring,
yeah,
which he shouldn't even be able to do. And through the whole thing, Booster's just like, ah, whoops. This is kind of awesome, though, right? He just wasn't taking it seriously because he's Booster, and he's just like, oh, well, I can just undo all this. It's not that, like, his reaction to Hal blowing his brains out, that was kind of awesome.
That's right. That's Booster for you.
Oh yeah. It was just,
but you're right.
As usual,
dark.
King just really gets these characters on some level and just writes them so well.
That was one thing I had a problem with. Was with the gun-toting Batman. I was like, no, not again. Just because we had to deal with the future Tim Drake.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, no, not my Nightwing.
It made sense. For me, it made sense within this because this is a world where Dick Grayson is never mentored by Bruce Wayne. And so he would not necessarily have those qualities instilled in him. He would have basically become Batman entirely on his own. And thinking about how in dark a place he was right after his parents were murdered, it makes sense. It's not a story I'd want to see, and I think King realizes that and then kind of moves away from that. That's not the story that he's trying to tell, which I think is smart. But at the same time, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, yes, the real Dick Grayson would never do this, but we're in such a dark, twisted world, it kind of makes sense that he's here. But the story isn't about that either, which is, I think, important.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to Mr. Miracle number 8. This was still a good issue, but for me, it's been the weakest one of the series, I think. I don't know what you thought, Cletus.
I don't know. I quite liked it. I liked seeing the... I thought it was so clever the way they split each. So when you're thinking about a comic and the way you're looking at it, you've got, you know, one page on one side, the other, and of course, as books work. But the way they played with that idea of both Big Barda and Mr. Miracle are splitting their lives. And so each of these spreads are split in half. On one side, you see him being a dad. And on the other half, you see him being the High Father leading an invasion against Darkseid. And so essentially every time you turn the page, you've got one half is this and the other half is this. You're seeing almost like a literal representation of the split in his life. And how juxtaposed they are. I mean, in one, he's just a normal dad doing normal dad things. And then on the other, he's leading an invasion against a otherworldly army. It's crazy. And seeing those two kind of next to each other, I think, emphasizes how kind of crazy their lives really are.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. One of the reasons why I think it was one of the weakest ones is the story didn't really move along that much. And whether Scott was with the baby or he was on the field, he was getting the crap beat out of him. trying to deal with the baby, trying to deal with the war.
I feel like you could say that about most of the comics within this run, though. The plot, so to speak, moves along, I find, in more subtle ways. Like, if you think last issue was the birth of their kid, which obviously that's a big plot moment, but essentially the entire comic is over the place of a couple hours or so, and yet it still had important story details. Right, we find out that he is the new High Father, and in this one we see a passage of time, and we can see that the invasion is not necessarily going well, but not necessarily going poorly. It's just sort of in a sort of standstill. I don't know, I didn't find it to be any different as far as progression
I feel like that's almost sort of the point, that the sort of fight against Darkseid isn't really something that progresses, right? It's always sort of like this. It's always sort of just an internal stalemate.
Yeah, right. Well, I still thought this issue was my least favorite of all of them so far.
That's fair.
So I'm not saying that it's not good.
No, I understand.
It was my least favorite of all of them so far.
Yeah, that's totally fair. For me, I really enjoy. I think I got, just as like a, you know, comics geek, so to speak, about like the way comics are made and the way they're presented, I kind of nerded out over the whole split page thing.
Of course, did you read a physical copy of it?
I did.
See, I read it digitally, so I didn't really pick up on that much. And maybe if I would have had a physical copy of it, I'd have been more awed by the paneling.
And I'm not saying that people should be. That was just for me. And, you know, as with all stuff like this, it's subjective. And for me, I was just like, oh, this is so cool. I love this.
So, I mean, the story's still good. It just was a weaker one for me out of the series. So, I mean, I still liked it. And I knew where Scott was coming from. I've dealt with 4 babies over my adulthood. So, I did have to laugh at him for that. But, and I was like, man, he's getting the crap beat out of him too.
The scene where he's like, yeah, I'll go beat whoever it is, and then proceeds to just get creamed was so funny.
So, but it was still a good issue. All right, let's move on to The Brave and the Bold, Batman and Wonder Woman number 3. Now, the main thing I liked about this issue was we got to see Batman being a detective.
Yeah.
And it was much better than the previous issue number 2, where it seemed like the story didn't move forward very much. But I really enjoyed this one, Batman and Wonder Woman exploring this world.
I agree. Did it feel to you that, like, I felt like we definitely saw him being a detective, but it didn't feel like, we felt like we made some progress, and then he sort of was just like, okay, I've helped. And I was like, wait, but you've not helped that much yet.
Yeah, I got that feeling too. I mean, he was there. He'd done some investigations. He was ready to go back to Gotham because he wanted to solve the problem that was there.
I mean, I felt conflicted about that because I couldn't tell. I was like, would Batman do this? It felt like he wouldn't, because I can't imagine Batman leaving a mystery unsolved. And that sort of felt like what he was doing. Like, I could buy into the motivation of him trying to get back to Gotham first, because, of course, Gotham is his thing. But I was like, yeah, but, like, you've not really solved this at all. It felt wrong on some level for Batman to be like, yeah, I've found one clue.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that, because I basically felt the same way. I'm like, why is he wanting to leave already? And then I was happy that he changed his mind when he discovered that the investigation ties to his, so...
Yeah, yeah. My problem with this series, I mean, again, I like you, I enjoyed this, and I continue to be very intrigued by the story. I think the artwork is the thing that really draws me in, just like the world that he's creating is so interesting and intriguing. It's just so talky. I don't know if that makes sense, but like, it's hard to read sometimes because I sort of almost lose track of what's going on. I'm reading so much. I know that sounds dumb because, of course, you read comics. But like on some level, I'm like, there's so much dialogue. I feel like you could cut out and still have the basic message there.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a little hard to read sometimes. And some of it is the kind of narration that goes through. I mean, especially, I think it was an issue too, because it seems to have a tone that's not modern, you know what I mean?
Yeah, which makes sense. Like, so the tones, for the most part, makes sense with given this sort of old world that they're in. But when, like, in this issue, when Batman and Wonder Woman talking, even their dialogue felt, like, off a little bit. It felt, like you said, it felt not quite modern. I was like, I mean, I can understand the Fae and all of them talking differently, but Batman and Wonder Woman should still talk like Batman and Wonder Woman. It felt like Batman was even like very verbose, especially for Batman.
And that kind of makes it hard for reading, I think. Now, there was a scene in there I thought was pretty hilarious. And that's why after Bruce gets up and he's basically skinny dipping in that little bath thing or whatever it was, and Wonder Woman shows up. I thought that was pretty funny.
Again, I'm enjoying this, but I continue to feel like I'm not enjoying it as much as I could be. And I feel it just always feels like there's this one thing missing or like a minor change they could make to make it hit that extra level for a story.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It feels like it's a little off.
Yeah, it's good but not great would be how I would describe the series, at least up to this point.
But it still got me intrigued where I want to read more, so.
Right, yeah, I agree.
All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Batman, Creature of the Night, number 3.
Now, I have to admit, I was under the impression this was the last issue, and I finished it, and I was like, that was not a satisfying ending. And then I looked up and saw that there was an issue 4. I was like, oh, thank goodness. I was like, it was really good. Like, the issue was excellent. And then when it ended, I was like, wait, what? I am not satisfied with this. So I'm happy to report that there is another issue, which is great because it was like there clearly needs to be more. Like, the story's not done.
Okay. Did you see when the next issue is supposed to be out?
Let me look it up. I can't remember.
You don't have to. I have it in my notes. Okay. Issue 4 has been delayed until August 21st.
Oh, no.
Yes. So it's a long way off. Now, when I was reading about this delay, they were talking about issue 3 being delayed. I didn't realize there was a delay in issue 3. I don't know if it's because we've been so busy with other stuff we've been talking about. I didn't think it had been that long since we had gotten number 2.
It had definitely been a while, but I didn't really think anything of it because with these prestige issues, there's always been like a month gap in between. Like, they're going every other month, essentially. At least that's how they did the Dead Man one. I think that's how they did Supergirl, too, I think. I didn't think much of it. It may have been longer, but it was one of those things where it didn't really – I maybe thought about the issue, and I was like, yeah, well, it's been a while. But then again, I kind of expected it to be a while. So I would totally believe that there was a delay, but I definitely didn't notice simply because I was expecting there to be a delay.
And I was actually surprised it was out. I was like, wait a minute, this wasn't on my list. And I quickly
it caught me off guard. I had no idea it was coming out this week.
I didn't either, and I quickly put it on our list. There was some cool stuff that happened in this issue.
Yeah.
One of the first things I want to talk about is we've been wondering the whole series so far who this Batman creature thing is. And we find out it's Thomas Wayne, the twin brother of Bruce, who his mother lost in the womb. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
I did too. I thought that was really cool. I thought it was a neat twist on that sort of – that part of the story is becoming more and more accepted as part of the Batman canon, that there was a Thomas Wayne Jr. And so seeing them put a new twist on that, because most people have gone the Owlman route, and to see it go the other way and have him essentially be the one that becomes Batman in this weird kind of way, it was cool. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. So, and, you know, supposedly the Batman is it's something supernatural. So,
yeah.
One of the things that Bruce finds out in this issue about Detective Gordon Hoover is that he's on the take. And this really breaks Bruce's commitment to his mission.
Yeah, that was such a neat twist because it was cool. So the first part of the issue kind of plays on that classic idea of Gordon and Batman working together. And you're like, okay, yeah, this is kind of cool, especially because they had had a sort of like they had been kind of toying with that idea in the first couple issues. And so you see that and you're like, oh, this is nice. I like this. And it kind of lulls you into a sense of security. Like, yeah, now we're getting into classic Batman. And yet again, much like how there was that sort of twist in issue 2 where all of these wise investments that Bruce was making were really because Thomas was making them happen. In this one, all these investigations that he's helping Gordon with are really just helping Gordon and the crime family that he's being paid off by. I thought that was just fascinating. I thought that was such a cool creative decision.
Yeah, it was a nice twist. I wasn't expecting it at all. I was like, whoa.
And the thing that makes it work so well, too, is because this is this different world, it's not Jim Gordon, right? It's this other guy that's, like, similar to Gordon. It doesn't feel like it's not true to the character, right? Because he's not Jim Gordon.
Right.
And it really gives them the sort of freedom to do things like that.
Yeah. And I like how we have in this series, we have twists on characters, like his Uncle Alfred and Robin, the girl he saved. Some great twists on the different characters.
And the thing that I continue to be super impressed by is how they keep the reader on their toes. Like I keep thinking I know where the story's going, and then they twist it on you. Like, oh no, it actually, like, no, Batman is actually responsible for all these accidents. Oh no, Gordon is actually on the take. Bruce is going down some sort of dark path now at the end of this issue. I'm sure he won't stay that way. But it's so cool. Just like, I don't know what to expect because they keep throwing these twists at you that you don't see coming.
That's one of the things that makes this series so great. Now, at the end of the issue, it looked like Bruce had given up all hope. And it looked like he became one with the creature. But I wasn't really sure about that.
That's what it looked like to me, too. And when I was under the impression that that was the end, I was like, that is such a dour ending, because it could work. And basically the ending is just Bruce accepts becoming this evil bat creature. And I was like, oh man, that's dark. And that's when I did that little bit of very simple research. I'm like, oh no, I'm just an idiot. There is a fourth issue. I couldn't believe that. I was like, wow, I can't believe DC just signed off on such a dark ending.
So I do not know what's going to happen in the next issue. Yeah. And it's got me excited to see it. So
yeah, I'm excited too. I'm not excited to wait until August. But again, as we've said with a lot of other comics, I'd rather wait and get the best version of the final issue than have them rush it out and get something less than.
Yes. And we know it's supposed to wrap up this, so it's been a very good series. So I'm looking forward to reading that when it comes out. All right, well, that wraps up our comics talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
We are the Metal Geeks Podcast, and on this show, we have heavy metal, comic books, video games, movies, theme parks, and more.
Wait, comics?
Yep.
And movies?
Exactly.
Video games?
Yeah.
Metal?
Of course.
How does theme parks fit in this?
It just does. All of us Metal Geeks can be found at MetalGeeks.net.
At Metal Geeks for Twitter.
Metal Geeks on Instagram.
And Metal Geeks on the Facey Space. You can also find us on iTunes. Subscribe today.
Metal Geeks.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 3, Episode 14, Shot Through the Heart. Well, she's finally back, Cletus, after being on hiatus for weeks.
Yeah.
This episode is about Wynn dealing with his mother's return after 20 years and his father's death, Toy Man. I like this episode a lot. I'm getting to see the story focused on Wynn, because he's been more of a side character lately, and I'm glad they focused an episode on him.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the story was excellent. I thought the only thing that held it back a little bit is that Toy Man has not been a big enough character to have quite as big of an impact as it could have had. You know what I mean? Like, if we had gotten like a couple more episodes of it, I feel like it would have been a huge emotional impact. Like, oh man, like this constant threat in a sense for Wynn is finally gone. Whereas like we've always kind of known that that's there, but it's always been sort of just like out there, right? Because what did we get? Maybe two at the most.
Yeah, maybe
episodes of him.
Maybe I only
really
remember
easy,
one.
I know. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I know I vaguely remember one, and I think maybe there was two. It'd be really easy for some viewers to not remember at all and sort of be like, wait, who? Oh, I didn't realize his dad was a villain. Now, don't get me wrong. The story is good enough that I think it works even without that knowledge. But I think it would have been even better if it had that little extra punch from that character being maybe a little bit more relevant to the show in its current state.
Yeah, because the Toy Man story that I remember was back from season one, I believe.
Yeah. So. And I want to say there was at least one other one, but he was pretty good. Don't get me wrong. He was a pretty good villain the couple of times that they used him. And I'm fine with the story that they told. Again, I think if you had one other Toy Man story this season, even just one this season, I think would have refreshed people's memories enough to have this story be just a little bit more impactful. That being said, again, I thought it was still very well written, and just like using it as a sort of allegory for abusive parents, I thought that was excellent. The story worked. Don't get me wrong. It worked. It could have been even better.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It would have been nice for him to show up a little more. And, you know, it might have been more menacing if he had dealt with Supergirl more, too. So,
exactly. It felt like the show dealt with him like he had been this, like, long, lingering threat to the team. And he really wasn't. And, you know, obviously for Wynn, he is, but we, the audience, never really saw that. So we didn't really feel that same kind of weight lifted that they did.
Right. And maybe that's because they were keeping it more of a Superman villain, because Supergirl didn't deal with him that much.
Right.
So that could be the downfall of that. But like you suggested, if they would have played his character up a little more on this show, it would have had a bigger impact.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, even just one episode early in the season. Now, I can't fault them, because I think the season has been so strong. It's not like there was an episode they could have replaced it with necessarily. But I think if you had had one somewhere early in the beginning, I think that would have been enough to refresh people's memories. Because, like, I know that his dad is Toy Man, but it's not really something I think about episode to episode.
Yeah. All right. And another storyline that was going on in this episode was Supergirl and Mon-El. And basically, Mon-El wants to have a conversation with Supergirl, and she seems less than thrilled to be talking to him about his wife. Mon-El found out from his wife and from his best friend, Brainiac 5, that they came back. He thought they got stranded here on accident, but they actually came back to this time period for a reason. And that's because they had found out that the third world killer, Pestilence, is the one who causes the problems for Earth in the future.
Which I thought was a really cool twist. However, it felt like they set that up as a red herring for no reason. Like, I was like, from a storytelling perspective, they did it to keep us guessing on what was going on with, like, why was he trying to talk to Kara? Was he trying to rekindle the relationship, which I think is what they wanted you to think? And it turns out he's really just trying to tell her about that. But it felt like from a logical standpoint, it didn't make sense for him to approach the conversation that way. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Why wouldn't he just be like, hey, Kara, by the way?
Yeah.
It was one of those things I got what they were doing from writing a TV show, but it didn't make sense for the characters to handle it that way. Also, I don't totally buy into the logic of them not telling Mon-El ahead of time. Like, I get him being trepidatious about going back to that time because Supergirl's there, but I can't imagine him being so hesitant that he wouldn't go.
Yeah, I mean, they still want to save the future.
Right, yeah, it was like, I mean, clearly, I mean, as this episode demonstrates, like, he is a much, much better person than when we saw him in last season. So I'm pretty confident that he would have made the right call there. Yeah, so it was weird. It's a cool, don't get me wrong, it's a cool development, but I thought it was odd the way that they chose to go about and presenting it and have that be the big cliffhanger from that sort of hiatus that they went on. Like, now it's time to tell you the real reason we're here. That almost didn't really seem cliffhanger worthy to me.
Now, like you said, Mon-El is much more mature now that he's been gone for a while, joined up with his team. He's matured a lot.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question, because I've been thinking about this, and then listeners will know that we're recording this on a Monday, so I've actually seen the next episode of Supergirl as well. I won't get into what I saw there, But part of me wonders, we had this big gap, right? And we also had one of the showrunners leave. I wonder if they changed what was going to be the twist with that.
That's
part of me, like watching it, it almost seems like they were going to do something else with Mon-El. Generally, the fan base's complaints about Mon-El, like a lot of, especially female viewers, strongly disliked Mon-El last season. And it feels these last couple episodes have felt sort of reactionary to that and are almost an airing of grievances against the character. And part of me wonders if they changed the story, because, again, we had that huge hiatus. And more importantly, we had one of the showrunners leave, who, by the way, was part of the whole Me Too movement. And so I almost wonder if they had something different planned for that character. And then they, as a show, decided, oh, maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe we should do something else. Because to me, the red herring and as well as the twist made it seem like they might going towards Mon-El staying in the present, which would, of course, lead to Mon-El becoming a love interest again.
And again, I could be wrong, but I got the impression that the show at least was considering exploring the story of Mon-El and Supergirl getting back together. They've certainly teased it enough this season. And whether they would have or not, I don't know. But part of me wonders, and I'm curious if you have thought this or got this impression, that they changed course, that over this production hiatus, they changed their mind on what they wanted to do. Again, they did lose a showrunner, so maybe if his creative voice wasn't there and other people are like, you know, actually, now that that dude's gone, let's not tell that story. I don't know. I have no idea, but I don't know. I've gotten that feeling like this isn't what they were originally going to do. And I don't know that's necessarily bad. I actually kind of like what they're telling, but I can't shake that feeling that it's not what was planned originally.
Okay, I'm going to agree with you because that's what it felt like during this episode. Like, they did a total 180. And I even think I remember reading something online in one of the articles that they were going to explore Mon-El and Supergirl rekindling their relationship. So I'm going to have to agree with you on that.
And maybe they still will. I don't know. But it feels like they're almost... At least with these first two episodes back, and I realize we can only talk about the first one right now, it feels like they're kind of pushing back against that notion. So that's what's making me wonder if they changed their minds or something. I don't know. I'm very curious to see how the rest of the season plays out, and specifically in regards to those two.
Well, I have not watched tonight's episode of Supergirl yet, so I'll be interested in seeing what happens on that episode. All right, well, there's two other things I want to touch on quick before we move on from Supergirl. We see the story between John, his dad, and Alex, where John's father seems to be getting either Alzheimer's or dementia, and that was kind of an interesting side story there.
It is a good story, and I'm excited. I shouldn't say excited, but like it's a story that I'm very interested in, and seeing that play out. It is such a bummer, though. I mean, that's so, like... I know there are a lot of people that can relate to that sort of thing, and that's tough. That is so tough.
Yeah, that would be tough. All right, and the last thing I wanted to talk about real quick was we saw James Olsen trying to get a hold of Lena, and she just wasn't answering. And then at the end of the episode, we see that Lena's caring for Samantha, so she's trying to solve her rain problem, I guess.
Yeah. Now, we know that she's caring for her, but if we think back to last episode before the hiatus and then this one, the level of secrecy that she's going with this, it continues to be a little odd. It almost seems like they're playing it from a little bit of a villainous perspective, but I don't know if that's intentional or not, or if that's just the way that they've shot those scenes.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's that intentional, but I don't think Lena's wanting to give out what's really going on with Samantha. I think she wants to fix her.
I think the big problem is we know that Kara and James and all of them are all like they're in on everything, right? They're both the civilians and they are the superheroes. And it's hard to remember that Lena doesn't know that. And so you're always like, well, she should just get Kara and they can work it out together. And like, wait, no, that's right. She doesn't know. Or talking to James, she doesn't, you know that James also knows that who Supergirl is and all that too. So it can be kind of hard, I think, at least for me, to remember that occasionally, that Lena is part of one of the friend circles but isn't part of the other half, even though it's the same people involved.
Right. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode. Flash, Season 4, Episode 18, Lose Yourself. So we see Team Flash beginning the episode by searching for the last bus meta, Edwin Goss, and we find out he has the power to create and travel to pocket dimensions, and thus he has the ability to enter Thinker's hideout.
He was cool. We didn't get to see a whole lot of that character, but he was a lot of fun.
He seemed like he was kind of whacked out part of the time.
Yeah, definitely under the influence of something.
Another thing we see in this episode, we see Barry and Ralph arguing about killing DeVoe. And we find out it's not because Ralph is scared for his life, it's because he's scared of what DeVoe will do to Team Flash, which now Ralph is viewing as his family.
That was a nice character moment. I will say it did do the same thing that a growing complaint had been for me, where like it feels like Ralph's storyline is like the same storyline over and over. They just keep recycling it slightly differently. Like, no, Ralph, that's not how you be a hero. You have to be a hero this way. And then they're like, oh, no, actually, you should just be you, Ralph. Like, good Lord, people. Can we tell Ralph's story a little bit differently one freaking time? Apparently not, too. By the time of the end of the episode, apparently that is the only way they're ever going to be able to tell a Ralph story.
All right. Well, Harry comes up with a device that can stop DeVoe and even kill him. And it's a giant tuning fork.
That did lead. That invention was super cool. It did lead to. It was so cheesy. It took me out of the episode briefly when Ralph ultimately uses that tuning fork, and then he's like, "If I use this one more time, you're dead." And I was like, "That, come on, guys." It was too ridiculous. Like, he delivered that. It's such a cheesy Silver Age line, and he delivered it so seriously. And he's holding a tuning fork. It was just like, guys. We can't. And it's Ralph. So I was like, guys, I cannot possibly take that line seriously.
So Flash, Cisco, and Killer Frost suit up and try to travel to DeVoe's lair. And lo and behold, DeVoe, expecting this to happen, travels to Star Labs. So pretty convenient.
Yeah.
Now we see a cool fight between Iris and Marlies.
Which was awesome. And Iris was awesome in that. Arguably more badass in that than when she was the Flash.
Yeah, she was. She was pretty awesome in that fight. We see Joe take on a samurai robot. And I was kind of disappointed we didn't get to actually see what happened.
I was too, but then I also think it was a smart decision, because I feel like watching that fight, it would have been hard to accept him winning. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that.
It's just what we've seen that samurai was capable of doing. I'm like, okay, it's awesome that Joe won, but I think on some level, while it's disappointing we didn't see it, it'd have been hard to swallow him actually winning that fight.
Yeah.
So it worked for me.
All right, and then we have Ralph versus DeVoe. And we see, what is cool is we actually see Ralph defeat DeVoe.
Yeah.
But apparently he goofed when he stuck on the handcuffs.
Oh man, what a turn. You thought, oh wow, okay. So okay, obviously DeVoe's not defeated. Duh. There's still so much of the season left. We were like, okay, I wonder if I thought he planned to get captured, and now next episode will be him doing something to break out. But man, what a dour note this one ended on.
Oh yeah, it sure did. DeVoe kills Ralph, takes his power. I was like, oh no, not. I knew it was coming, but I didn't want to see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we kind of knew, especially when we talked about, we knew why DeVoe wanted Ralph's power. And so it was inevitable that it would happen, because you have to show we figured it out, and maybe most people did, but you still almost have to show people that, like show the reason why Ralph was one of the metas. So it felt like getting control of him was inevitable. Part of me is, I hope, I don't know if it's hopefulness or
I think Ralph is going to come back, and I think some of the other metas are going to come back because they were so unique. I don't know. It would be such a waste, I think, with not obviously Ralph, but with a lot of the other, like the one that we saw in this episode. I really like the luck-based one, who I continue to want to call Jinx. Part of me wants at the end of the season for all of them to be restored, just because they're all kind of fun characters that I think would work as one-shot villains to throw back in future episodes.
Right. I agree with you. I don't want Ralph to be gone. So, I don't know what they're planning, but I'm wondering if they're going to bring him back too. He's such a great character.
Yeah. I'm very hopeful that they will. I will say, while I obviously am not happy in the slightest that Ralph is gone, one nice thing that it does do is it brings the original DeVoe actor back, who is really the only one who is any good at playing that character. Like the other ones, like there's sort of that novelty of seeing DeVoe in those bodies, but that kind of gets old after a little bit. You're like, yeah, you're not really DeVoe. Like we knew that actor had to come back because he's really the one that makes that villain work.
Yeah, he really does. And it's going to have to be a confrontation between him and Flash to really have the real showdown, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Two other things we saw during this episode. First one, Harry zaps himself with a thinking cap in dark matter. And I'm kind of curious to see what that's going to do to him.
Yeah, so this seemed to be sort of the answer to the sort of ultimately ended up being a red herring of, is this actually Thawne in disguise? I'm almost disappointed that it was just him, like, basically being addicted to the thinking cap. Because, like, I was like, oh, man, it'd have been so cool if it was Thawne.
I know it would have been. And then the other thing we see is Caitlin loses her Killer Frost powers.
Yeah.
Did you feel like that was the end for Killer Frost?
And that's the thing. So that was when I finished this episode, I was like, I feel like both her losing her Killer Frost abilities and Ralph dying are both temporary. But then again, they could both be permanent changes. And I would be disappointed in both cases because Caitlin's so much more interesting with the Killer Frost aspect to her character, because otherwise she's basically just there and she almost turns into a Thea character.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's another reason why I think the various metas, not just Ralph, are going to come back. Or maybe it will just be Ralph. Because if Melting Point comes back, because clearly we learned that somehow off-screen DeVoe got to Melting Point too, which I thought was odd that they didn't ever show that. I almost wonder if Melting Point's going to come back so that she can then get her powers back again.
I don't know.
It would be a very odd decision, I think, to completely get rid of Killer Frost, especially when they finally had her come to peace with that, to then just get rid of it. Like, well, then what was the point of the story in the first place? Like, why get to her to that point as a character and then just be like, yeah, and you know what? We're just going to undo it.
Yeah, I don't know. They were just getting to a good point with her, I thought, that she'd be more interesting, so.
We'll see. I feel like that's a temporary thing. I don't, again, that's the same thing with Ralph, where I don't know if that's based on a logical thing or if that's just what I really want.
All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Black Lightning, Season 1, Episode 13, Shadow of Death, The Book of War, and the season finale. So we got to learn more about the origin of Black Lightning via the black and white flashbacks. And I think this episode did a great job of wrapping things up so that it can move on to the next season.
I agree. I thought it set up season 2 very, very well. I think that's... The CW shows are usually pretty good about at least introducing some sort of cliffhanger. But this one, I thought, really clearly set up, not necessarily a cliffhanger, but more like, you know what season 2 is going to be about. Is going to be about Tobias Whale versus Black Lightning.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting. Because, I mean, like, cliffhangers can be fun, but then it's sort of, the story sort of becomes less about, like, what the show is going to be about and more like, what's the answer to that question? And I think it puts unnecessary weight on those first couple of episodes to answer that mystery. And Black Lightning doesn't have to do that. Instead, it's just going to get to go into the story it clearly wants to tell in the first place.
And, at the end of the episode, we see Tobias basically declares himself King of Freeland. And he said his first order of business is to finally destroy Black Lightning. Perfect setup for next season.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, I don't need a big cliffhanger. Like, we know he's the villain. We know Black Lightning. And now he's got his full family, super family, essentially established. Like, that's enough for me. Like, that alone is more than enough to be exciting to see. So I can't wait.
I know. It's going to be awesome. Another thing we see in this episode is we see an afterlife scene where Jefferson and his father Alvin resolve their unfinished father-son issues.
That was kind of nice. It was not something I was expecting from this episode, but it was cool.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it either, but it was cool. Now, were you surprised when Tobias sent Lala in as a human bomb?
It made sense. Like, it was like, okay, I get it. But I think they hinted at Lala not being dead, because you had his henchmen say it's unclear if Lala died or not. I hope he's not dead, because how unsatisfying of an ending would that be?
Yeah, that's one thing I put in my notes. I was wondering, you know, if he was going to be reanimated again.
Well, especially because they actually, I was suspecting that maybe he was the tattooed man, because of the way we were seeing the ghost sort of form onto his body.
Uh-huh.
And we got that confirmation in this when Tobias calls him the tattooed man. I was like, oh, okay, I was wondering if that's who you were. So you go out of your way to actually, like, name him. And it was like, and then we're just going to kill him? So I assume that he's not really dead.
I have to agree with you. I was surprised when they made him a bomb. I'm like, they can't be done with him yet. So I would not be surprised to see him back next season.
It made sense. Within the story, it totally made sense. But yeah, just, you know, from a show perspective, it was like, man, that is not a satisfying end to that storyline. I'm pretty sure we'll see him next season.
Now, we got to see more Martin Proctor this episode. He does this full-on Trump thing. Let's make America great again. He was really racist.
Yeah, he yes, very racist. I thought he was definitely over the top. I don't think the show really missed out on much by not focusing on him early, because he was a little too cartoony for me. I thought he clearly made the point the show was trying to go for. One episode of that was enough for me, I thought, because it was just, as an idea, is a good villain for the show, but especially the way the actor chose to, like, really, I thought he hammed it up a lot. I thought he played to the camera a little too much.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that.
You know what I mean? Like, some of the lines were a little cheesy, but it was really, I thought the way he was delivering the lines was what really kind of pushed it into kind of almost campy territory.
Now, we do get a confrontation between Proctor, Gamby, and then the rest of the family. And Proctor calls Gamby a monster. Gamby agrees and shoots him.
That felt like a little bit of a cop-out to me. It felt like the only reason Gamby was there was so that he could kill Proctor. Because it clearly the show clearly did not want Black Lightning to kill him. No. Because that would not be very heroic. That would, especially in the way that scene played out, there's no way that doesn't come across as just an ugly scene.
And
it felt like a little bit of a cop-out. Like, we know we need to kill this character, but we don't want our heroes to do it, so we'll just bring in this other guy to be there to do it. That felt weak.
Now, the other thing is, none of the family said anything about it.
Especially with the teenage daughter there, and she's just sort of like, oh, yeah, that dude just got shot, like, three times in the chest. That's fine. Yeah, I agree with you. I thought that was weird that they all basically just kind of shrugged their shoulders and moved along.
But overall, this episode was great.
I honestly thought it would have been a lot better for Tobias and or Lala to be the one to kill Proctor, because it felt like, and that's really what Tobias was doing. He was overthrowing Proctor. He allowed Black Lightning to do the work for him. But that would have been a way for that character clearly had to die. It would have been a better way to, I think, kill the character rather than essentially forcing the less heroic character to do it, because the heroic character can't.
All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Arrow, Season 6, Episode 19, The Dragon. We get a great story about Diaz's origin, as well as him getting a foothold in the Quadrant, which is a massive criminal organization located in Bloodhaven.
This was cool. I mean, again, I think it was a little overdue. I think this was something they could have given us a couple episodes earlier. Again, if you take out some of those dumb episodes with the team schism, we could have focused on this, because this is an interesting story. And it's the Diaz story as a whole has been the most intriguing thing of the whole season. And why this season has been so insistent on telling anything but this story continues to be baffling to me.
One thing we learn about is we get to learn about some of his history. So we learn that he's an orphan who was bullied by an older boy who made him feel like a loser.
Yeah, and that gave a very interesting pathos to the character, because we can see he is so driven by that experience that everything he has done in his life essentially has been in response to that experience as a child, which I thought gave a lot of depth to his character and really gave a nice layer that we hadn't had with him before. This was cool. It was so cool seeing this whole episode from his perspective and seeing him actually... We've seen his plans executed, but we haven't actually seen him doing a lot of them. We've sort of seen the aftermath of those plans. And so it was cool actually seeing one actually being put into motion. We kind of talked about this off the podcast. I liked it, but I felt, for me personally, I felt a little disappointed in what we got. I think in part because what I was hoping for was a mastermind, and what we got was someone who's smart. But everybody, the whole thing with this whole episode is that everybody keeps calling him a thug, and he takes offense to that because he's better than that, at least in his mind. But my takeaway was that that's really what he was. That even if he wasn't, he kept stooping down to that level. He kept living up to people's expectation of him. And so it was less, to me, he was less, a master chess player moving these pieces around that we've seen. Like, we know on some level he is that, on the way he's been able to manipulate people, but we didn't get to see that in this episode. We instead saw a bull running through a china shop. You know, like, yes, he got what he wanted in the end, and in part because of smart plans, but it was less sort of masterminded and more just like ramming the door down and taking down everybody in his path. And it felt also like he succeeded mainly because he had Black Siren. You know what I mean? Like, it was, when I finished that episode, I was like, well, I enjoyed that and I like his character, but I didn't end that episode going, oh, that's a really formidable foe. It was like, wow, he's really lucky he has Black Siren on his side.
But on that fact, even if he didn't have Black Siren with him, he would have used other people or other means to get to what he needed. That's kind of what he does.
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, and he should get credit for being able to manipulate Black Siren to do the things that he wants. And don't get me wrong, I will give him credit for that. But it was, again, it's a good episode. But what my hopes for what the character was going to do inevitably kind of harmed when I didn't get that. And that's not fair necessarily to the show. But what I wanted wasn't what I got. And so I'm pouting instead of what I'm saying.
Now, we had one thing I wanted to talk about was Diaz calls his fear the dragon. So the fear he feels from when he was bullied, he calls the dragon. And he's determined to conquer it no matter what, because he never wants to feel powerless again. That's where he's driven.
And that was very interesting. And like I said, I really like the pathos that they gave the character, because, I mean, he needed to be fleshed out because they haven't focused on him all season. And so I thought this was a very necessary episode, and I just wish this was sooner. If we could have gotten this sooner, think of how many episodes we'd have left to really fully explore this.
Yeah, you're right.
And next episode, we basically have a solo Oliver versus Dragon, and that's cool. That's interesting. Why did we have to slog through all this other crap to get to this? I feel like we could have streamlined a lot of this season in a sense.
Like, you could do a lot of the stuff that we got, whether you like it or not, but we could have gotten to it sooner. And I feel like we're at the interesting point of the season. Like, we've hit the good, like, the meaty part of the story. Why did it take this many episodes to get to it? I really don't like that. I don't think there's a good justification for the earlier episodes for why they took up so much time.
All right. Well, the story comes back around at the end of the episode where we see Diaz confront his bully. And really, the bully's moved on with his life. And it seemed to me, it feel like he had moved on from being that bully person. But Diaz has no desire to let it go. Now, one thing we saw in this episode was Black Siren being kind of like his conscience. And she keeps pointing out other ways to do things, or he doesn't need to do what he's doing, but he keeps pushing on. And we see him basically set that bully on fire.
That was his, like, just in case you weren't sure, I am a bad person. That was that moment right there.
Oh, definitely.
That was dark. That was pretty dark. And it made him look so small, too. Which, again, like, that's part of what makes him a villain, right? Is that he lacks some part of that humanity. That part that makes him a good person isn't there. So, yeah, I thought, again, one of the things that really made him an interesting villain.
Yeah, so do I. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, so since we got Action Comics 1000, it's the 80th anniversary, right, for
yep.
Superman? I thought I'd just recommend a couple of my favorite Superman ones. I've talked about them before, but again, if you read Action Comics 1000, you're like, what are some Superman stories that I could check out? So ones that I really like are Superman American Alien, which is a pretty recent one, by Max Landis, and is drawn by a variety of artists. That one's super cool. And it's sort of like his path towards becoming Superman. They're like seven different stories, all in different stages of his life before he can become Superman. And then the other one is All-Star Superman by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. It's such a good Superman. To me personally, it's my favorite Superman story. It's the Superman story. Like, if I meet somebody and they're like, hey, I'd like to really read a good Superman story, that's the one I give them. It's just... Grant Morrison basically takes Superman, and instead of asking the question, how can I depower him to make him interesting, he says, ask the question, how can I make him at his most powerful and still be interesting? And so he goes that route instead, and I just find that fascinating, because you're getting, like, Superman at peak Superman. You're getting him at his superest. And it's just so good. The artwork is fantastic, and it has one of the most iconic Superman scenes when he saves a girl from committing suicide. That's just one of the best, if not the best, Superman scenes I've ever read. So All-Star Superman, my hands down my favorite, and then Superman American Alien, also excellent. Check both of those out.
If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133 or email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Coming up next week, we have The Terrifics number 3, Detective Comics 979, Flash 45, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 43. Plus, now we just have the CW Trinity now for the show Supergirl, Flash, and Arrow. So we'll be talking about that next week. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
You're ready to move out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.